Looking for a job isn't easy. It used to be that you could apply at a big name tech company and build a great career for yourself. But times have changed. Many of these companies have gone full woke. And if you aren't the right gender, ethnicity, you don't use pronouns, or if you're not an activist for the preferred cause, then good luck. Why would you risk your career on that? At Red Balloon, we're connecting good employees with top quality companies that value you for your skills and your work ethic, not your social activism score. Employers who post jobs on Red Balloon are focused on creating an enjoyable and productive work culture, free from divisive woke mandates. So if you want to find a serious career path without the nonsense, come to Red Balloon and post your resume today. Because you shouldn't have to choose between your job and your values. That's redballoon.work, where you can find your future.
It's undeniable that in the last 5 years, we've seen a dramatic increase of self-destructive behavior and practices, often leading to the end of one's life. We're talking about intentional and unintentional suicide. Trans people kill themselves at alarmingly high rates, and that's on top of their self-sterilization, which ends their life-creating potential. The Rainbow Mafia agenda is killing people. Our glad submission to statism and medical tyranny have also cost countless lives, with the full consequences still to be revealed for years to come. Lockdowns, mandates, and the jabs were catastrophic. They are killing people. Our elites want to make it both legal and normal to have children kill themselves through doctor-assisted murder. And from top to bottom, we are driving a communistic knife straight through the heart of our economy. All of this suicide, interestingly enough, is a microcosm for what's happening on a much larger scale. The suicide of Western culture and the Western world. Why is this happening? And what should we do about it? Well, that's what we want to discuss today. Spoiler alert, the answer is the Lord Jesus Christ. It's April 18th. I'm Andrew DiBartolo. That's Matt Halleck. And this is the Liberty Dispatch.
Hey, hey, and welcome back to the Liberty Dispatch, broadcasting across enemy lines into the Canadian culture war. We're so thankful that you're joining us yet again on the program, and we promise we have a wonderful show set up for you today. Wherever you're getting our content from, we would just ask that you would like, subscribe, rate, review, and hit that notification bell as well if you're on YouTube, so you can stay up to date with everything Liberty Coalition Canada. Also, all our podcasts, all our content is over at FLF Network, the Fight, Laugh, Feast Network, FLFnetwork.com, where you can check all our stuff out. You can also get us on demand right on your phone from the Fight, Laugh, Feast Network app. That's the FLF app at the Google Play or Apple app stores. You can download that, get all our content on demand, as well as the many other wonderful shows on the network. All things Liberty Coalition Canada are over at libertycoalitioncanada.ca. While you are over there, we would ask that you would please sign up for our email list so you can stay up to date with all our content and our various initiatives, what have you. Also, while you're over there, please prayerfully consider leaving us a donation. It helps us grow our institution. It helps us do the various things that we're doing. Legal analysis. We're also doing various initiatives. We have some wonderful announcements in the coming days of a few initiatives that we're about to launch that are, again, championing God-given rights and freedoms of everyday Canadians and pushing back against the insanity of our leftist woke culture. And we do that week in, week out, day by day through our news and analysis as well. So if you want to give to us, please go over to libertycoalitioncanada.ca/donate. If you want to give to the specific initiatives, click on that. If you want to give the news and analysis, be sure to send your funds there as well. And also, if you're paying by check or cash, please, if you're sending money to the news and analysis arm of Liberty Coalition Canada, make that out to Christian Week, our partners in media. Awesome. Let's move forward, Andrew, by the mailbag question for today. And you can reach out to us at mailbag@libertycoalitioncanada.com.
Yeah, so the question that I have for our listeners and our audience today for this episode is, what are you doing in anticipation of the economic suicide that is coming for us? So I don't need to know the 24 passcode phrase to your Bitcoin wallet. I mean, if you want to give it to me, if you want to volunteer it, I wouldn't say no. I don't need the PIN to your bank account. But we're just curious, in general terms, what are you doing? Are you all in on Bitcoin? Are you stockpiling gold and silver? Are you buying whiskey and bullets? I was talking with a group of people last night. Someone said, what are we going to do? And I said, whiskey and bullets. You can trade in them. You can have a good time. You can fight off tyrants. So what are you doing? Are you, and like, by the way, if you haven't gotten out of one of the big five banks, like RC Sproul, what's wrong with you people? We're going to be talking on Thursday's episode. We're going to be talking about the globalist empire striking back, and we're going to be highlighting some of you who are TD customers may have received a letter regarding digital banking. So we just want to know what you're doing, just so we can get a sense of where we're at. So reach out to us, mailbag@libertycoalitioncanada.com, and say, I'm doing the gold, I'm doing the crypto, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm starting to do a barter thing. Just let us know high level what you're doing. It'd be great to poll our listenership and see where they're at. We look forward to that. Friends, you might think that woke politics and medical tyranny have destroyed the Canadian workplace, but did you know that some companies are standing up and saying no? In just 1 year, over 2,000 companies have pledged to honor free speech and medical privacy at redballoon.work, and Red Balloon has landed in Canada. Business owners, if you want to find top-tier, values-aligned talent, or want access to one-of-a-kind courses and guides that will help you build an uncancelable pro-freedom workplace, then sign up today at redballoon.work/LCC. Job seekers, if you're tired of skin-deep promotions and vaccine checkpoints, and you want to find a courageous company that shares and protects your values, new jobs are waiting for you at redballoon.work/LCC. Again, that's redballoon.work/LCC. Matt, one of the ways that we are killing ourselves as a culture is through the destruction of our children, right? And so this is what we're talking about today. We are talking about the self-destruction of the West, the suicide of the West, Western culture, Western values, the Western world. And it's not just the ideological suicide of the West, and it's very much that, but it's the suicide of the West in terms of lives lost, livelihoods lost, economies crushed. This is happening right now. And
well, Andrew, I just want to say, ideas have consequences. Bad ideas have body counts. And that's what we're seeing, right? That's what we're seeing manifest in our culture now. We've so degraded ourselves that there's actual physical bodily ramifications. That's what we're dealing with.
And as we discuss the suicide of the West, we want to focus in on this area first, the fact that there is an intentional attack upon our children. And not just our children presently, because consequently what this translates into is the future of the Western world, right? If you devastate children now, either in their death or their inability to create life and reproduce on their own, then you're not just killing present children. You're killing the potential for future children and the propagation of our world, our values, our culture. So we have three stories that we want to look at within this idea here of the destruction of children as being one of the ways that the West is killing itself. And it spans three different countries. We're going to be looking at a story from the United States, a story from Canada, and a story from the Netherlands. So we'll start with our neighbors to the south first. On April 12th, Washington state lawmakers debated Bill 5599, and it's titled An Act Relating to Supporting Youth and Young Adults Seeking Protected Healthcare Services. They voted on and passed the bill. Now, we want to show you a brief video of some legislators discussing the consequences of the bill. And then when we come back after the video, we're going to highlight the specifics of the bill and really get at what Washington state lawmakers deem appropriate, normal, and right in their state.
Senate Bill 5599, which would create an exemption from the state of notifying parents where their kids were in the effort where they were seeking medical care, really eroding parental rights in the state of Washington. Essentially what the bill would do would be if a child left a parent's home for certain medical care and went to a shelter or host family, that shelter or host family would not be required to notify the parents of their child's whereabouts. This is obviously a fundamental violation of parental rights and something that's deeply concerning for parents across Washington state.
Now, they're obviously safe with what they're saying, right? He's still playing their game. He's still playing, mm-hmm. Oh, they're seeking medical care. So we're still using their dictionary to discuss it. So, I mean, at the best, he's a pseudo-conservative. Maybe if he is, I don't know if there are any conservatives in Washington state legislature. Yeah. To be honest, I know there's some good churches there, but maybe not any conservatives. So we have to, I want to read right from the bill. And the bill has its, you know, fluffy duffy garbage language. And then after we read through it, we're gonna do what we do here. We're gonna cut through the euphemisms and help you understand what's actually going on. So this is right from the bill. Quote, any person, unlicensed youth shelter, or runaway and homeless youth program that, without legal authorization, provides shelter to a minor and that knows at the time of providing the shelter that the minor is away from a lawfully prescribed residence or home, without parental permission, shall promptly report the location of the child to the parent, the law enforcement agency of the jurisdiction in which the person lives, or the department. Now, if it ended there, that would be great, except for this clause. Unless a compelling reason applies as defined in subsection 2 of this section. So what do we find in subsection 2? Quote, compelling reasons include, but are not limited to, circumstances that indicate that notifying the parent or legal guardian will subject the minor to abuse or neglect, when a minor is seeking or receiving protected health care. Protected health care services has the same meaning as provided in chapter in Senate Bill number 5489. Oh, so one of the compelling reasons is protected healthcare services. But what are protected healthcare services? Well, you won't find that in this bill. You'll have to go look up Bill 5489, which I did. And this is what Bill 5489 says. Protected healthcare services, quote, protected healthcare services means gender-affirming treatment and reproductive health care services that are lawful in the state of Washington. But what's gender-affirming treatment, you might ask, from the same bill? Quote, gender-affirming treatment means health services or products that support and affirm an individual's gender identity, including social, psychological, behavioral, and medical or surgical interventions. Gender-affirming care services include, but are not limited to, evaluation and treatments for gender dysphoria, gender-affirming hormone therapy, and gender-affirming surgical procedures. Matt, can you help us navigate that word salad a little bit? What are they at? What Bill 5599? Mm-hmm. What are they actually saying? And what does all this gender affirming protected healthcare service nonsense actually mean?
Well, I'm struck, Andrew, how just an ordinary person has to do so much digging to actually get what's in the bill, right? You have to look at three.
And I think I'm an extraordinary person. So an ordinary person It's like,
anyway. Of course you are, Andrew. No, but
not necessarily in the good ways that you might be thinking.
Yeah,
I think maybe not the best ways.
I think it's cumbersome in the way that they've laid out this law. Not only have they not done it in plain language, absolutely, but then they've deliberately just referred to different bills, so then it's not apparent right on the face what the bill does. And that's why we're here on the program, to make sure that we're digging into this stuff. Because as you made mention, Andrew, we have to cut through the euphemisms to get to the heart of the thing. So the heart of the thing, in other words, Andrew, is Washington State has just made it legal for any persons or organization to hide children and not notify their parents, so long as the children want to mutilate themselves and chemically castrate themselves, and if the parents oppose that decision. This will inevitably lead, no doubt, to the death and destruction of many children in Washington, as we've seen over and over and over again. As this transgender craze progresses, more and more gender detransitioners come out and speak to the devastating lifelong harms that supposed gender affirming care, which is actually sex denying, creation denying, biology denying, mutilation, and it's not care at all. But the fact of the matter is, this isn't only happening in Washington State. Washington State, the left coast of the United States of America, tracks very close to Canada. And the sad part is, it's even worse north of the 49th parallel. It's even worse in our nation of Canada. The Special Joint Committee on Medical Assistance in Dying, or AMAD, you have to be mad to be a part of it, submitted their second report on February 13th, 2023. And the Medical Assistance in Dying in Canada, Choices for Canadians, is the name of that report. In their report, they had a series of recommendations, but before we can understand what's going on, we need to understand the concept of a mature minor. Because according to family health law, a mature minor in Ontario is a person who is 17 years of age or younger, who has been found capable of making their own treatment decisions. Notably, it is possible they will not be a mature minor for all medical decisions. So that's what we're dealing with, Andrew.
I mean, they're not going to answer this question, but the question is, found capable by who, and according to whom, based on which standard? Capable, like, according to, according to the person who thinks that if you think you're a lizard, you're now lizardkin, and you can have surgery to have your tongue split and have scales affect, like, that is that the person that's determining that your child is capable?
Yeah, or the various people who are pretending they're some sort of animals and are identifying as pagan animal gods like Horus and stuff like that. Yeah, we're seeing widespread mental illness, but the fact of the matter is, we've just seen in Washington what was seen and recognized as mental illness, gender dysphoria, those sorts of things, is now celebrated and affirmed. And if you don't do that, you're liable to lose your medical license for not affirming this mental disorder that is usually attended, right? You know, it's dysphoria of any sense is not, you know, doesn't usually live in a vacuum. It's surrounded by all sorts of other identity issues, all sorts of mental health crises accompany those sort of dysphoria issues. And that's basically bore out by all statistics surrounding the issue. Yet, in the medical community, many of those minors who don't know what sex they are and who have this mental delusion, they're seen as mature enough to make the decision to chemically castrate themselves, to mutilate their bodies, to make neo penises and neo vaginas out of their leg or arm or something like that. So when we apply that to medical assistance and dying, we're letting children who we don't let vote, who in many instances we don't let drink because they're not capable of making those decisions, who are still years away from having their brain, their prefrontal cortex fully developed, we're letting them make irreversible decisions in their lives, like crazy sex change surgeries, or in this case, death. That's what Canada's allowing.
What do you mean? You mean that you mean the parents, if the child wants to have a doctor kill them and they're a minor, aren't the parents allowed to intervene?
Well, that's where we have to go back to the AMAD report to understand why Canada is so bad. So here's recommendation 16 from the AMAD report. That the government of Canada amend the eligibility criteria for maids set out in the criminal code to include minors deemed to have the requisite decision-making capacity upon assessment. Recommendation 17, that the government of Canada restrict MAID for mature minors to those whose natural death is reasonably foreseeable. That language is probably doing a lot of heavy lifting. Let's move on. Recommendation 19, that the government of Canada establish a requirement that, where appropriate, the parents or guardians of a mature minor be consulted in the course of the assessment process for MAID, but that the will of the minor who is found to have the requisite decision-making capacity ultimately take priority. So here you have minors who are being assessed by psychological professionals, supposedly, to deem that they're mature enough to make the life-ending decision to pursue suicide. That is what is now being recommended to our federal government in the expansion of the MAID process. And the committee wants to make it legal to have minors, as long as they're capable, supposedly, to make this decision, to have a doctor assist in their death. And if the parents don't want it, the law would require that this minor, who generally, we've all been teenagers. We do not have, as teenagers, a proper perspective on life at all, right?
If every teenager who ever thought, I don't know if I want to live anymore, or what's the use of me living? Who's going to miss me if I die tomorrow? If every teenager who's ever thought that thought for more than a week was allowed to act on it, then half of them would be dead.
Exactly. And this is what we're seeing. The policy in our nation is, instead of caring for those with severe spiritual or mental disorders, we are saying that the best solution to dealing with this problem is to kill them. That is insane.
It's also pretty, I mean, that is awful. That is ghoulish.
Yeah,
but it's as if it couldn't get any worse in Canada in that recommendation 19 that you read there. So it says, yes, the will of the mature minor is ultimately the one that takes priority. Earlier in the recommendation, what does it say? That the parents and the guardians will be consulted where appropriate.
Yeah.
So you would think, listen, if a 15-year-old wants to kill themselves, the parents, even though the parents can't stop it legally, at the very least, the parents should know. But here they're saying only where appropriate. So there's a world where a 15-year-old could go to the school nurse and express deep feelings of depression and say, but my parents are fundamentalist Christians. They won't understand. And then the nurse can provide this student with a contact to go to the hospital to end their life, and the parents will never know about it.
Mm-hmm.
That is unbelievable.
And we're seeing that type of that scenario is no longer far-fetched, right, Andrew? Because we're seeing that actually take place in schools around our country and around the globe, where these
with the transing stuff.
Yes, exactly. LGBTQ, where all these teachers and psychological authorities deem themselves the true experts with the true authority, rather than having derivative and delegated authority from the actual caregivers, the parents. They deem the parents as being idiots, rubes, fools that they have to disabuse their children of their prejudices. Therefore, it's incumbent on them to be the mediator, to step in and to facilitate the wishes of the child against the wishes of the parent. So instead of, you know, the Washington legislators talking about this is a fundamental assault and affront against parental rights, well, there's many socialist, Marxist type educators and administrators who believe it's their duty to actually disabuse children of their family's prejudices. And essentially, they have the understanding that, you know, this idea of family patriarchy and hierarchy is inherently wrong and bad, and that these children actually belong to the state and the collective in general. So they're actively working over and over and over again to subvert parental rights. And in doing so, they're leading children to secretly transition socially in school, sometimes medically. And then, you know, in this case, we've already seen the precedent. We've already seen teachers totally willing to destroy parental rights, and now we're just opening the door for them to do it, not for transition, but for death, for suicide, for state-funded and state-sanctioned suicide. It's crazy, but this is 2023 in Canada.
Washington bad, Canada worse, but if we want to get to the bottom of the barrel, we actually have to go over to Europe. So as bad as all of this is, the Netherlands, they're leading the way in the West for the destruction of children. And they seem to be right now the most devout members of this current death cult. So on April 14th, just last week, the Dutch government modified its Euthanasia Act to include children between the ages of 1 and 12 for the first time ever. This means that parents can legally have a doctor murder their child if the child is deemed to be suffering unbearably with no hope of improvement, and when palliative care will not bring relief. Health Minister Ernst Kuipers, and what an unfortunate last name, Kuipers. If only he would be more like his father Abraham. This is what the health minister said. We are talking about children who are so ill that death is unavoidable, and they are expected to die soon. Like, what a monster. Ugh, anyways, general regulation for euthanasia already covered terminally ill babies and older children in the Netherlands. Babies under one could be helped to die under the so-called Groningen Protocol, while children between 12 and 15 could ask for help to die under the laws if their parents agreed. Young adults of 16 to 17 years old can request euthanasia but must inform their parents. This is what the health minister concluded. I am glad that, after intensive consultation with everyone involved, we have reached a solution that will help these incurably ill children, their parents, and also their doctors. For what it's worth, if you think this ends with children suffering physically, you're missing what's going on here. Okay, where this is going is children with depression, or who are just really, really sad. and having a
but
bad.
But that'll never happen. We'll never expand medical assistance in dying, so called, to those with just merely mental ish. Oh,
yeah,
we're doing. Well, yes. We're doing that. We're doing that now. That's the exact trajectory that this has gone towards. And this is a very thing that people were worried about from the moment that assisted suicide, so-called, was even first put on the table in any Western nation, first adopted by the Netherlands, leading the way in destroying themselves through suicide. And we're just seeing the progression, right, Andrew? As Canadians, if we go back to what we're talking about, oh, we're talking about mature minors. So this is, you know, really, really, they're on the precipice of being adults. They're 17. You know, what's 1 year? We're talking about really exceptional children that we can classify as mature minors. That's not really that bad, is it? But what have we seen? We've seen the exact same progression take place in Canada as it has elsewhere. And what are we seeing? It's just once you, it's not a slippery slope argument because ideas have consequences and logic tends to prevail. So it's the logic that undergirds this death movement for medical assistance and dying that logically works its way out into this end. And we're just seeing progression after progression, incremental steps towards, yes, it starts off, okay, it's only in severe medical circumstances where death is on the table. Oh, well, that's too restrictive. We need to broaden that out to include mental illnesses. Oh, okay, why are we just restricting that to adults? We have to we have to include mature minors. Oh, well, if we're going to include minors, why wouldn't we therefore include all minors?
And everyone, but here's the thing though, Matt, mature minor isn't an age thing. So when we think mature minor, like I think most of our audience would also think mature minor means someone who's 15, 16, or 17, right? Because they're a minor, but they're on the mature end of minor. However, the definition of mature minor is any minor that they deem capable of making these decisions. So
yeah.
The reality is you could have an 11-year-old child that's intelligent, well-spoken, and able to articulate reasonably how they feel and what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be deemed a mature minor because I know 12-year-olds that are more articulate and better able to communicate what they're feeling and what they want than 16 and 17 year olds. So a mature minor could be 10. It's any minor that they deem capable.
And yeah, so
that's
elastic.
What's so egregious about this. There's no, it's quicksand. There's no foundation to determine. And that's the goal. They don't want to actually, they don't want to have an age restriction. And all of these things, this is the woke play, whether it's racial stuff or gender stuff or economic stuff or now, you know, self-murder, what they don't want to do is actually have definite restrictions and boundaries. They want it to be vague and vacuous and just abstract out there in the ether that there's no way to tie it down to anything, very open to interpretation, because then it's open to all sorts of abuses and all sorts of negligence.
Absolutely. And that is a design rather than a bug. We've seen that over and over again. If we were really caring about the rule of law, we would make law very specific and exact, but leftist progressives want it vague and inarticulate. Therefore, they can kind of just do whatever they want and have broad discretion given to them and their machinations. And Andrew, the crazy part is we've been talking about gender transition, so-called, about mutilating and chemically castrating children. We've been talking about children seeking their own death, facilitated by the state. But we haven't even touched on the fact that each and every year in Canada, we usher 100,000 preborn babies to their death to be directly and intentionally killed with the use of taxpayer money and the sanction of the state through abortion. So it's not hyperbole to say in all these instances that the Western world is literally killing its future. Mm-hmm. And that is in the sense that we are offering up to the idols of comfort and ease our very children. It is a new modern form of child sacrifice and Moloch worship, and it is horrifying, but it is here and it's being enshrined into our laws.
Separating money from the state is a core tenet of Bitcoin's ethos, a permissionless network where the individual is in full control and accountable for his own property. Bull Bitcoin, Canada's most trusted exchange since 2013, is built around this ethos and leverages it in its mission to end central banks forever. At Bull Bitcoin, where security and privacy are priority, they take it upon themselves to help empower individuals with the most potent form of money the world has ever known. Head to mission.bullbitcoin.com/LCC today and get started with your account's creation. Contact Bull's best in the business customer support team at any point throughout the process to request assistance. mission.bullbitcoin.com/LCC. Take control of your money. We've been noticing a little bit of an uptick lately from our audience over at mission.bullbitcoin.com/LCC in light of lots of what we're going to be talking about on Thursday: globalism, mm-hmm. central bank digital currency, global currencies, the destruction of the US dollar, the collapse of our economy.
We have a smart audience.
A little bit of a signal there. Yeah.
We obviously have a smart audience. Yeah.
We have some good stuff coming up. So we want to move on in our episode. We're talking about the death and ultimately the suicide of the West. So not too long ago, we covered a story about BC decriminalizing illicit drugs. So we'll just kind of bring everyone back up to speed. Matt, what was that story about? And how's that set up this next little bit of the suicide of the West?
Yeah, well, as of January 31st, 2023, BC has started this process to decriminalize drugs within the process. So between January 31st, 2023 and January 31st, 2026, the BC government will remove criminal penalties for anyone carrying 2.5 grams or less of illegal drugs. That includes, yes, it includes hard drugs like heroin, cocaine, you name it. Okay. Carolyn Bennett, Federal Minister of Mental Health and Addictions and Associate Minister of Health, had this to say about the decriminalization process. The shocking number of lives lost to overdose crisis requires bold actions, like decriminalizing drugs, and significant policy change. I have thoroughly reviewed and carefully considered both the public health and public safety impacts of this request. Eliminating criminal penalties for those carrying small amounts of illicit drugs for personal use will reduce stigma and harm and provide another tool for British Columbia to end the overdose crisis. So the question is, now that we've seen a few months pass of the decriminalization of drugs, has stigma been lifted? Have people been truly liberated? Have overdose and the epidemic that is plaguing BC, has that ended? What has the effect been? Well, this comes to us from the Canadian Press. BC tragically set 3 new overdose records this March, just the second month after the Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's federal government sanctioned the province to decriminalize all drugs in an effort to combat the crisis. In March, BC saw the most overdose calls ever recorded in one day, a whopping 205, the highest 30-day overdose call average was still insanely 119.9 overdoses, and the most days in a row where paramedics were called to 100 or more such calls, which was 19 days consecutively, where paramedics in the province of British Columbia were called to attend to overdoses, Andrew. This experiment has busted open the floodgates.
Yeah, and one would, so there are two ways to approach this, and we'll see this in our third story as we talk about the economic suicide in the West. But the two ways to basically approach this are to say, one, they are so utterly incompetent and negligent that they were just fulfilling their woke status desires and really didn't know what it would do, which is the position that a lot of people took and a lot of people I know took at the beginning of the COVID madness, right? The position was they think the masks work, but they're wrong. They think the lockdowns work, but they're wrong. So it's not intentional malfeasance, it's negligence. They're negligent, they're incompetent, and they didn't know what it was going to do. So that's one view. Now, respectfully, that's stupid, because no reasonable person knowing anything about the history of medicine and science could come to that conclusion. And it's the same thing here. By removing the shackles of people who would otherwise be punished for carrying substances that will destroy them, to think that that will lessen people destroying them is so foolish, which leads to the second option. They knew exactly what they were doing, knowing that it would have this effect. And why? Well, maybe by doing so, they understood that it would increase the need for police and health services, i.e., we need to spend more money. We need more tax dollars and we need a bigger bureaucracy. We need more government officials because now we have the higher need in hospitals and paramedics and doctors and police officers and firefighters. So we need more money. We need a more inflated managerial state. Maybe that's why. Maybe just to generally crush and destroy the will and health of the people could be another thing as well, because now if you do this, now they're gonna lose their job. They're unable to work. So now more welfare, bigger state, right? It can't be negligence. It can't be. I've said this before in a previous episode. When you line up all this stuff together, all the gross incompetencies and how collectively they work together to bring utter destruction, you would have to plan with meticulous precision to be that stupid and to do that much damage. That cannot happen accidentally. You cannot just accidentally roll into this kind of chaos. You have to plan for it. It's written all over it. So this move by BC is terrible. But these are not the only drugs that are killing people. It's not just the illicit or illegal drugs that you're now allowed to carry. No. It's the legal and the often mandated and coerced medication as well that are killing people. So research from Finance Technology, spelled P-H-I-N-A-N-C-E, although technically finance, spelled traditionally finance, would also be ironically appropriate, founded and operated by former BlackRock portfolio manager Ed Dowd, Yuri Nunes, and Carlos Alegria, split the impact of the vaccines into four broad categories to estimate the human costs associated with the COVID-19 jab. So they've broken into these four categories: no effect or asymptomatic, those who sustained injuries, mild to moderate outcome, those who became disabled, severe outcome, and death, which is the extreme outcome. Now, here is what they found. We want to put this picture up for you, and I will explain the numbers for those of us in our audience who are listening. Here is a graph highlighting their results. This new report estimates that 26.6 million people were injured. 1.36 million people were disabled. And 300,000 excess deaths can be attributed to the COVID-19 injection damages in 2022 alone. Now, again, we're left with the question, is it the case that our health czars and our elected officials and big pharma, that they were well-meaning and well-intentioned, that they thought this is going to work, this is going to fix the problem, this is going to destroy the deadly Ebola COVID virus, and they played it wrong, right? They just fumbled the ball over and over again. They picked it up, they fumbled it again, they reached for it, they tripped over their own shoe and kicked themselves in the face, and then fumbled. Is it that? Probably not. It's probably not that. It's probably the case that they knew exactly what it was going to do. And we covered in last week's episode, we showed a clip from a speech or a presentation that Naomi Wolf did at Hillsdale College. And she gives the receipts showing that this feels a lot more like a bioweapon that is targeted to do damage than just a well-meaning injection. And so I'd recommend go listen to that episode, because you'll find in the description a link to her full presentation along with other people as well. So it could be negligence, probably not. It's probably the case that given what they knew about lipid nanoparticles and mRNA technology and what they clearly saw in the limited trials that they did, that this was going to be utterly catastrophic. And why? Why do it if it's going to be utterly catastrophic? Again, because there were trillions of dollars that exchanged hands, lots of money to be made. The largest wealth distribution and relocation of people in terms of economic classes that we've ever seen in the history of the world. So There's that. There's a growing state and a growing tyrannical managerial state and their control and their totalitarianism. A more compliant, dependent, and weakened populace physically, emotionally, spiritually, psychologically.
Yeah.
The increase of measures, like in Ontario, last year was a record-setting year. There were over 200,000 Ontario government employees making over six figures. Mm-hmm. So all these things are the reasons why they would intentionally do something like this. And again,
it's a disrupt and dismantle.
Yeah.
And the
people who, because of fear and anxiety or because of an unwillingness to confront the world as it really is in front of them, that we accepted, we supported, and many are still giving cover to the suicide of ourselves by the embracing of this statist scientism and all of its mandates.
Yeah.
We have killed ourselves to the tune of hundreds of thousands of excess deaths that we know of.
Yeah. And the just the entire ethos of the respect and for the dignity of human life is so so diminished in our society. It's experienced such degradation that we essentially view human beings as meat machines, and that idea, that ideology that's fostered by Darwinism, it works its way out in the way that we live our lives. Is too many people think of human beings as merely widgets, and yet, like I said, you know, mostly wet bags of mostly stardust, and you know, like, it has ramifications on how we treat human beings. And what's taking place, to go back to the first story that led off the segment, what's taking place in British Columbia and some other jurisdictions around the world is a human experiment. We're doing a human experiment on people based off of bad psychology and psychoanalysis, right? This is really rooted in kind of the psychoanalytical kind of conception that human beings have this innate base nature, the id, right, in Freudian psychology. They also have an ego, which is essentially the thing that checks the most base inner desires of human beings is the ego. It's a thing that really kind of tries to do natural repression of that inner drive, that animalistic urge that is deep inside of human beings. And then another layer of consciousness is the super ego, right? Where it's this societal impression that is brought to bear on what's good, what is moral, what is right to do. And in Freudian analysis, what leads to psychotic breaks of the individual where the ego is destroyed and the id is just let free, human beings are essentially reduced to animalistic behavior. It's this tension that is experienced between the id and the superego. And essentially Freud, what his call is to do is for the superego to be diminished. Therefore, it doesn't lead to that friction between the id and the superego that then destroys the ego, right? So there's this tension. So what these leftists and progressives are doing is they're saying, well, what's really taking place is society is imposing too much strictures, too much on responsibility on people. Therefore, if we remove that stigma, if we remove that, it'll lead to better health outcomes. But essentially what you're doing is you're making a very sick society even sicker. You're sanctioning very sick behavior even more. And you're not, like, I think there's a very good case to be made that, biblically speaking, the war on drugs and government sanctioning and jailing people for the use of narcotics and drugs is inappropriate. But that's also in a society where, morally speaking, the use of drugs in general is inappropriate, right? Because we're to be sober-minded, we're to be aware. Using drugs is morally reprehensible from a biblical framework. It might not, and I think there's great arguments for it, be criminal. I don't think we should have a police state that's doing that. But now we're not in this perfect Christian utopia. We're in a society where at the same time we're legalizing all drugs, we're not putting the moral imperative on that behavior. So we're just opening the gates of hell and saying, go for it, everybody. And what is that actually leading to? More death, more destruction. And in the case of the vaccine, Andrew, well, we've seen that human experiment play out to the death of and harm of many, many individuals across this globe. And again, this is just another indication of the Western world committing suicide.
Yeah. So we got to talk about the economy, how we are killing ourselves economically. We're killing our economy. And while we're talking about the economy, we have to talk about what's going on in our world. In the past several weeks, we've seen multiple U.S. banks wiped out and several more put on life support. Silicon Valley Bank was the largest bank crash since the great financial crisis of 2008. Now is the time to minimize your exposure to the big woke banks and look for some alternatives. When it comes to your investment accounts, give our friends at RockLink a call. They're a 100% Christian, Canadian-owned firm, and they're dedicated to helping people like you align your financial goals with your faith. You don't have to check your faith at the door when you work with the investment professionals at RockLink. In fact, you can show up, have a coffee, and talk about all things theology with the guys at RockLink, and I can tell you it's an enjoyable time. I've done it a bunch. Get some of your money out of the banks and put your family's financial plan on the right track. Email RockLink at info@rocklink.com or visit them at www.rocklink.com. That's link with a C. So there's actually a little bit more. That last story we just talked about, the same article doesn't just talk about the physical amount of death and damage done by the jab and the mandates, but it continues on. So not only did the jabs destroy lives, which is supremely tragic, of course, it also had terrible economic consequences along with the mandates, the lockdowns, and the restrictions, all because of statism and medical tyranny. Another way that we are killing ourselves is our economy. So not just lives lost, but economy destroyed. And by the way, for people, and you know, this is often a leftist tactic that is deployed against people who are socially conservative. Well, we care about people and you care about money. We care about lives and you care about the economy. We care about people and you care about jobs. What they neglect to mention is that plunging people into poverty actually costs more lives. Like if you have a plunge into poverty locally and worldwide, you will see more lives lost around the world. If
which
more
is
people
borne
plunge
out
into
by
poverty, yeah,
it's poverty borne out by the numbers. Yeah,
people die. Yeah, so there is an actual tangible connection between jobs lost, an economy suffering, unemployment, mm-hmm. and lives lost. And the connections are the threads are many. It could simply be because of poverty, starvation, and lack of access mm-hmm. to the food and the healthcare required. It could also be because it creates homelessness, and homelessness for a number of reasons can lead to mm-hmm. lives lost. It creates dependency on alcohol and prescription mm-hmm. drugs and illegal drugs, and suicides. So it's not just about caring about the economy, because when you devastate an economy, you devastate lives as well. So in mm-hmm. analyzing each of the above categories, right? So when it was analyzing the effects of the jab in terms of no effect, asymptomatic, moderate effect, you know, severe effect, and then obviously extreme like death, finance used absolute excess lost work time to determine that the direct economic cost of vaccine injuries was $79.5 billion in 2022. And $52.2 billion for those with severe disabilities. For deaths, finance used the average yearly absolute rise in excess deaths since 2021, which was 0.05% for the 25 to 64-year-old demographic, which amounted to $5.6 billion in lost productivity. In total, they found a total economic cost of $147.8 billion in 2022 due to the COVID-19 injections. As Dowd notes, so one of the people behind this here, these figures are just what can be currently measured as things like, quote, the knock effects such as lost productivity due to a worker being present but working at, say, 50 to 75% of capacity is missed, plus burnout from those picking up slack. The multiplier effects are massive, close quote. Now, you would think maybe that our elected officials would understand the consequences of their leadership and direction. And I'll say here again, if I might be so inclined as to put on my jewel-encrusted tinfoil crown, maybe they do, right? I, as more time goes on, I am not willing to grant negligence as an excuse. Mm-hmm. I am more and more inclined to say that at every step, it is intentional, evil, and malfeasance. Maybe they know they're sinking the ship. Maybe they know that they're collapsing our economy on purpose. And why, you might ask? Why would they do that? Well, maybe they're setting the stage for what we're going to be discussing on Thursday's show, which we're going to save for Thursday. Maybe what this is it's just like Chancellor Palpatine setting the stage for the Galactic Empire, only it's Emperor Trudeau getting us ready for the globalist empire. Maybe mm-hmm. that's what's happening. Otherwise,
yeah, disrupt and dismantle. Yeah.
Otherwise, it is unimaginable levels of incompetence that would lead to statements like this from our own prime tyrant and either economic buffoon or intentional economic destroyer, Justin Blackface Trudeau.
Telling people they can opt out of inflation by investing their savings in volatile cryptocurrencies is not responsible leadership. By the way, anyone who followed that advice would have seen their life savings destroyed.
Or if you use your credit card, you go into debt to build an expansion on your house that you're then going to be able to sell your house for more. If you're making investments that are going to return, that is how you grow a strong economy. Because quite frankly, confident economies invest in themselves.
He is so such an adult.
So really quickly, if you couldn't see the numbers, in the span of time between those were two different video clips of our prime tyrant. And in the span of time between those clips, which wasn't very long, maybe about a year or so, while he was disparaging Bitcoin, the value of Bitcoin essentially grew by about 60%. It increased by 60% in that period of time, where he was saying, if you were a fool and you invested in Bitcoin, your life savings, blah, blah, do.
Which is a sideswipe at Polyev, because he talked about Bitcoin being opting out of inflation.
So,
and whatnot.
So in the same time while he's saying this, the value of Bitcoin goes up by 60%. What is he saying? You know what you need to do? You need to start spending more money via credit card, rack up credit card debt. That's what helps to grow an economy. What sage advice.
Yeah. And just so we all know, confident economies produce more, they increase the structure of production, and they spend less than they make. That's totally not what Canada does. We even though we have some of the most resources, we're a resource-rich nation, we outsource a lot of our manufacturing and production, and then we spend far more than we make because all the idiots who are in charge of our finance are Keynesian statists who are there to increase their portfolio and their wealth and their power. They're not actually responsible financial actors who are working based off of immutable praxeological ideas that are at the basis of economics, Andrew. And when we talk about, I wanted to jump in, but just for the sake of flow, I let you continue on. I just want to say, why does poverty tend to lead to worse health outcomes, suicidality, all these things? Well, because poverty and lack of work and unemployment, you know, it gets to the very heart of the Dominion mandate. What human beings created in the image of God are designed to do, and we're to work and worship. Those are the two W's that span the whole of our lives, and our work should be worshipful. But essentially, to alienate an individual by unemployment or having no work is detrimental to the health and well-being and purpose telos of that individual. That then just has all sorts of downstream effects on their lives.
It would be the same as taking these and visual. People might say, well, what does that look like? Like, help me understand what that looks like. As an analogy, this is one of the things you see. If you take a lion, for example, or a tiger that is supposed to thrive in the wild, in that setting, in that environment, that's supposed to hunt and actually get and search for and fight for its food and protect, and then you take that tiger and then you lock it up in a zoo, you will see an utterly deflated animal that is a shell of itself. And if you were to take that animal and then after decades of zoo life then reinsert it back into the wild, it would be not be accepted by the rest of the animals, but it would be unable to thrive, and eventually it would probably just die off very quickly. The idea is you are robbing the thing of its very essence and what it is at the core of it. And that's human beings. Yeah. That our core, our essence is to work. And you're taking away from us in the same way you would from a tiger the drive and the intensity to do the things that make it the thing that it is. That's what happens with unemployment.
Yeah, it's dehumanizing. It's the exact opposite of what Marx made work out to be, because Marx was a loser, lazy idiot. He satanic at that. You know, he totally was a fool. And we have to understand that work is a pre-fall institution that is a part of the human telos. And we shouldn't be surprised when reality bears that out, right? We don't see socialist utopias leading to human flourishing where everybody's like, oh, now that I'm liberated, so-called, from work, I can just paint a bunch of pictures for myself and do a bunch of art and it leads to high society. No, you never see that. It leads to death and destruction and decay. The people who are...
But you see people lining up for bread.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
The bread lines.
Thanks, Bernie. We actually see this in our society, right? Because while left talks about how marginalized so-called communities are the most at risk for suicide and poverty and all these negative health outcomes, what they forget to mention is a lot of those so-called marginalized communities are literally wards of the state. They've supposedly been freed from, the alienating work that human beings were actually designed to do. And yet that hasn't led to flourishing. It hasn't led to high culture. It's led to the exact opposite. But anyways, we have to push on so we can further look at how the globalist stage is being set for a takeover and how that's so detrimental to the thriving of the Western world. So what helps super international mega corporations thrive, one might ask? The devastation of small businesses, the same small businesses that were crushed by not COVID, as so many would speak of, but by COVID tyranny in the inane policies enacted by our governments at the provincial, municipal, and federal levels. Well, businesses insolvencies in January in Canada were an astronomical 55.4% higher compared to last year, according to new data by the Office of the Superintendent of Bankruptcy. The Federal Insolvency Regulator on March 1st released its January 2023 statistics on insolvencies in Canada, reporting an annual increase of 33.7%. A third, that's insane, in combined business and consumer insolvencies over the same month in 2022. Compared to the previous month, the total number of insolvencies in Canada, including bankruptcies and proposals, was 13.5% higher than in January. The report said bankruptcies were up 8.3%, while proposals were up 15.2%. The biggest increase in the number of insolvencies were registered in the accommodations and food services and construction sectors, the report said. Among 9,066 total bankruptcies and insolvencies recorded across Canada in January this year, Ontario had the most insolvencies with 3,164, or more than a third of the national total, while Quebec was close with 2,356 insolvencies. So we're seeing...
Anyone want to guess what those two provinces had in common? In terms of number one and number two,
strictest lockdowns,
the worst during COVID.
Yeah.
The absolute worst during COVID for mask mandates, lockdowns, curfews, the potential of police officers pulling people over. Like they were the worst provinces. And so naturally they're the ones that saw the highest amount of insolvencies because they crushed small businesses.
Absolutely crushed. And this is something that I don't think people truly understand the devastating ramifications of that. Because for people, economics seems esoteric, it seems academic, it seems like it doesn't really matter. But all that economics truly is human action. When we're boiled down these numbers, it's men being able to provide for their families. It's human households
as it pertains. I like David Bonson's definition that it's human activity surrounding scarce resources.
Yes, yeah.
A limited number of resources, mm-hmm. and how do we engage with those resources, which is the Dominion mandate at its core.
Yes, at the core.
That's what we're talking about. How do we deal with the fact that God's given us a finite number of stuffs in this world?
Yeah.
How do we engage with them?
And Alex 100%.
Has profound effects.
100%. And that's why it pains me that pastors and churches across this nation thought it was no big deal that people were just not being allowed to provide for their family, that the basic telos of man, that dominion mandate, was being cut off arbitrarily by government decrees, that was somehow appropriate and within the scope of government. It's not. And what we're seeing is these policies that were so disproportionate for the danger and the effect of COVID that we now know have such devastating and drastic results that anyone who would champion them and go along with them is responsible for the disruption and the dismantling of Western society. And Andrew, this is not, anybody who studies the annals of history will see this pattern repeated over and over and over again, is that sadly, the tendency of humanity is when we get prosperity, when we flourish, when we get fat, we also get happy. And we tend to, Andrew, we tend to become self-reliant. We forget that God is the God of all providence and he gives us good things. And I want to read this part of scripture because I think it's so indicative of what we're seeing play out in the Western world. It's from Deuteronomy 8 and it's starting in verse 5. And just for our listeners to understand the context, Deuteronomy is the second rearticulation of the law given by Moses to the people, and he's recounting in this part of Deuteronomy God's great deeds of providing for them in the wilderness. And then now he's talking about what happens when he finally leads them into the land of Canaan, the land of promise, through this next generation. And the scriptures read as follows, verse 5 of Deuteronomy 8. Know then in your heart that as a man disciplines his son, the Lord your God disciplines you. So you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God by walking in his ways and by fearing him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks, of water, of fountains and springs flowing out in the valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive tree and honey, a vibrant, flourishing land, a land in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills you can dig copper, and you shall eat and be full, and you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. But here comes the warning. Take care lest you forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his rules and his statutes, which I command you today. Lest when you have eaten and are full and have built good houses and live in them, and when your herds and flocks multiply and your silver and gold is multiplied and all that you have is multiplied, then your heart be lifted up. And you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, who led you through the great and terrifying wilderness. So this is a propensity, Andrew, of the human being that when we get prosperous, we turn our back on the provider, the God of all providence. We think highly of ourselves. We jettison God from our thinking, and we then leads us to forgetfulness of where the source of the gifts come. And this actually leads to moral degradation and the destruction of society. And that is what we're seeing in the West. As we abandon Christ, as we abandon God and his law, what do we have come in its stead? Death, destruction, and chaos. It's not whether, it's which. It's either Christ or chaos. It's either the God of all providence or death and destruction. And it appears that the West has chosen in its haughtiness to jettison God, to not give thanks to him, to view God as man and his own provider, and in doing so, to destroy himself and his society.
Yeah, and the irony, of course, is that the thought is that this is freedom.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? But what they're thinking is, by removing all of these shackles, we'll be free.
Yeah.
By removing the boundaries and the borders, we'll be free. And we won't be free.
No.
We'll be enslaved.
Freedom's only found in Christ.
Right. And that's what he says, right?
If
that you will know the truth and the truth will set you free, in acknowledging who Christ is and his role as God's chosen one and son to bring about freedom as his Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way you'll know the truth and the only way you'll be free. And so the thinking is that by freeing ourselves from the shackles, by pursuing this utopia, by saying we can live and die as we please, we're masters of our own destiny, we'll be free. The truth is you will be enslaved, and you will only equal more, it'll only lead to more death.
Yes.
And that's not what we want. What is needed now primarily is not new economic policies, it's not new legislation. What's needed primarily is people being called to turn from their sin and to bow the knee to the great King Jesus so that they would be free and alive and actually experience the abundant life that he offers now and the hope of eternal life someday. So that's the answer. The answer is in your soul, dear listener, and as you share with those who are disparaging, the answer to the death of the West, the answer to the suicide of the West, is only found in Jesus Christ, who is himself the way to truth and the way to life and the way to freedom.
Yeah. And he's the font of everlasting blessing, in whom we have true freedom. And it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to the yoke of slavery. Until next time.
Thanks for tuning in to Liberty Dispatch, a united front to restore liberty and justice in Canada. Please subscribe to our podcast and Rumble channel, as well as visit our website at www.libertycoalitioncanada.com.
Friends, we're posting new content multiple times every week throughout our various shows on this channel. So you're going to want to subscribe to it and hit that notification bell. That way you stay up to date with everything that we're releasing here with the Liberty Coalition Canada.